coming up on the Psychedelic Therapy Podcast.
I shared with you just a small glimpse of the Native American experience with regards to genocide and all of those types of things. And one of the things that if you think about that, and if you have an individual that's coming to you for care or for healing, we need to keep that in mind. And so anytime that there's a non-Native person, for instance, for myself, and this is my own experience and why I wrote about this, was when somebody wanted to help me that was non-Native, I was taken by that because I wasn't sure that they were really there to help me. And so it goes back to that trust and that respect, because all of our ancestors in the past, anytime somebody said that we're here to help you, there was always either taken of the land, they were forced on reservations, they were put in boarding schools. And so there's always this kind of cynicism about, you know, really, are you really here to help me kind of thing? And so to be aware of that, and to, in order to build that rapport with that individual, you really have to have patience and, you know, respect for that.
Welcome to the Psychedelic Therapy Podcast, a weekly conversation series with leaders in psychedelic culture, designed for therapists, healers, retreat leaders, and passionate enthusiasts, presented by Maya and hosted by me, Eamon Armstrong. Welcome back to the Psychedelic Therapy Podcast. I'm your host, Eamon Armstrong, and I'm so honored today to share that this podcast has reached 10,000 listens, which for something that we at Maya started from scratch a few months ago and have had about 15 or so episodes now, it's a real vindication to the idea that a podcast specifically for those who are interested in psychedelic healing and enthusiasts for psychedelic medicine really is valued and really is needed in the world. So thank you to everyone who's been listening along. I feel personally grateful, and on behalf of the team over here at Maya, we really appreciate you tuning in. So this week's guest on the show is Belinda Aracho, and she brings powerful insight from her lineage as a Native American woman and her life experience as a powerful healer and public speaker. We start the show with a land acknowledgement, which honors the indigenous land rights of the spaces that Belinda and I were both conducting the remote interview. We then explore some important aspect of Belinda's worldview, including humor and the principle of hojo, which means to walk in harmonious relationship with everything around you. Belinda shares her own experience of intergenerational trauma and her sacred corn pollen path. We end our conversation with important considerations for psychedelic therapists who wish to help heal Native people. Belinda is a healer and leader from the Diné, that is the Navajo, and Zuni lineage. She is certified in integrated energy therapy and has advanced degrees in health science, public and occupational health, and technology. Through her personal practice and her leadership as a public speaker, Belinda supports the healing of Native people and is helping to guide the psychedelic renaissance towards a more holistic perspective. Finally, if you haven't had a chance to check out the survey for psychedelic practitioners that Maya is conducting, I'd encourage you to take 10 minutes to help us shed light on psychedelic therapy practices around the world. And that is at mayahealth.com/research/surveys. And there's also a link to that in the show notes. And without further ado, here is the wisdom of Belinda Aracho. Well, hello, Belinda. Such a pleasure to meet you after being aware of your work for a few months here now and being really interested in having this conversation. It's such a treat to get to talk to you today. Thanks for coming on the show.
No problem. Thank you so much for the opportunity. I was a strong believer in trying to bridge that gap of understanding. And so this is another way of doing that. So I appreciate that. Thank you.
And just to start, you grew up at the Diné Reservation, correct?
Yes, I did. So before I get started, if I may, I want to do a land acknowledgement.
Thank you.
I currently reside in the Phoenix metropolitan area, and I want to honor and pay my respects to the ancestors of this land, which are the Hohokam and the Otam people, who are, in English, they're known as the Pima and the Papago people, who were the originally the caretakers of this land. And so I want to acknowledge them. I also wanted to extend a thank you to Chacruna organization. They really inspired me to write this article to help bridge this understanding. So I also want to acknowledge them for that as well. But yes, to answer your question, I did grow up on the Navajo reservation. My mother is Navajo or Diné, and my father is Zuni. They know themselves as the Ishiwi people. And so I grew up primarily as a Navajo person. And I don't know if you know very much about those cultures, but they're both matrilinear cultures. So a lot of who we identify as ourselves as comes through our mother's lineage instead of our father's lineage, which is kind of a little bit backwards for a lot of people that are from the Western understanding.
Well, I would love to do a land acknowledgement as well. I'm in Los Angeles. I'm in Topanga Canyon. And I've done a land acknowledgement once on another podcast that I did with Loretta Afraid of Bear Cook. And that was my first experience. So this is new for me. And I'm not completely sure who the people were who are in the very Topanga Canyon that I'm in right now. But what I see here about the different Native peoples that were in the Los Angeles area, I think that this is correct, but these look like Spanish names. So I just did a little look up here. Venturino, Gabrieleño, and Ferdinando. I don't think that's accurate, actually. How should one approach this particular process?
So land acknowledgements, a lot of times, and it's coming primarily from our Canadian relatives to the Northwest. The Canadian government, as part of their reconciliation with First Nations people, which are the same as Native Americans or American Indians here in the United States. The whole idea behind land acknowledgement is that to really honor the unceded territories of Indigenous communities whose land that were essentially taken from them. And the whole idea behind land acknowledgement is really for people to get an understanding of, first of all, who the people were that were there before them, but also to build, it's also an opportunity to build relationships with them. Organizations will go through a land acknowledgement and just, you know, like it's a box that just is to be checked off. But the whole premise is that you go much deeper than that and you actually try to build relationships with those Indigenous communities in that area. And so from what I understand in the Los Angeles area, a lot of the communities, Indigenous communities, were really set up as rancheras. Mm. That's why you have the Spanish terms that you're referring to. And then there's also, I did want to share with you, and I'll share with you a little later, there is an app where you can actually enter your location. And what will happen is it'll pop up with the original territories of those lands that were held by the Indigenous people. So that you can really, you know, get to know who they were. And it's really important for the conversation that we're going to have today for people to acknowledge that. And a lot of times, and we'll talk a little bit about this, is that throughout history, there have been a lot of historical events that have taken place that have gone unnoticed, or, you know, where Indigenous people have been, you know, essentially through genocide. And that trauma continues to linger on second, third, fourth generation, not only in just in Indigenous and Native American communities, but non-Native American communities. And I think once we can all recognize that we all come from a shared history, then we can start to come together and work together to change that narrative. And I think that is so critical for these times that we are in right now.
Well, thank you so much for that and for that context. Yeah. And I'm currently in Topanga Canyon, where it's not where I live, but it's where I am in this moment. And as I do a search here, I see that the Tongva people were in Topanga Canyon. And actually, the name of Topanga Canyon comes from the Tongva people. So that's something that I didn't know until this very moment. So thank you so much for sharing that. And I love the invitation that it's not a box to check. It's something to connect with more deeply. And as I've just expressed to you, this is a new kind of experience for me. And so I'm grateful for your leadership in kind of guiding us here to set the table for our conversation. So thank you.
Yes. Thank you for that opportunity.
I also appreciate your acknowledgement of Chacruna. Bia Labate is a pretty important leader in the space of psychedelic medicine. And she's actually been on this program as well. And I really appreciate the space that she holds. And she has so much integrity in really highlighting so many voices that really need to be highlighted. And I, of course, read the article that you wrote on that website. It was from a journal before. Is that correct?
Yeah, there were two articles that I wrote for them. One is on this particular subject. The other article that I wrote was in regards to setting up webinars or seminars or conferences and some things to get more Indigenous people engaged in the conversation.
Mm, nice. I haven't seen that yet. I look forward to reading it.
Okay. I'll send that to you after we get done here.
Awesome. Thank you. And we were just getting into where you were born. And I wanted to highlight that as well, because I'm actually from Santa Fe, New Mexico. So I imagine that we both have a similar love of those vast, beautiful skies. And that such a special part of the world.
Yeah, especially when the rain falls, you can just smell all of the soil. You can smell the sage in the atmosphere. I mean, there's nothing like that.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite things is the monsoon season when you just get that smell that you've just described. It's so rich and so alive, and it really makes you remember the earth if you've forgotten, which I think many people have forgotten, you know, that the earth is something that we are actually a part of. And one of the mm-hmm. things that's so profound about psychedelic medicine as a healing modality is that it does help us remember that we are a part of everything. And from what I've read of your work, this is a remembering that is deeply in you and your wisdom.
Absolutely. You know, when I wrote this article, actually last year, I think it's already last year, in August, I went to the MDMA People of Color therapy training. And it was really an eye-opener, but it was also an opportunity, because I just take it for granted that everybody carries the same kind of knowing. And it was really an opportunity to educate others. And so for about a good part of a year now, I've been out on a talking circuit such as this, some podcasts and conferences, and really just trying to bridge that understanding, because I think we are in a time where everyone is searching for themselves and their soul and their purpose in life. And what you find is you find a lot of, and even here in my own community, a lot of non-Native people that are really trying to find their roots and who they are as a human being. And so anything that I can do to help that understanding, I think, goes a long way. And as a human race, you know, we are all brothers and sisters. It's just the way that we are brought up and the perceptions and the way that we are all programmed that we see things differently.
Absolutely. And when I was reading your article and the focus was on the considerations for psychedelic practitioners when working with Native people, a lot of what you wrote are just really great things to keep in mind when working with healing for anyone. For example, I loved that humor is part of resilience. I mean, what a beautiful way of seeing pain and suffering and trauma, that there's this, you can bring in some clown, you can bring in some humor, and that can actually make you strong. And yeah, it was filled with a lot of nuggets. So I'm looking forward to hearing a kind of deeper exploration of some of these things that you brought up today. So
absolutely. You know, humor is one of those things that most people that are non-Native, you know, because they get a lot of their information from television or movies, and they get this perception that they see Native American people as stoic and serious. That's just kind of a front. And, you know, at the end of the day, we love humor, we love laughing, we love joking with each other. And so for therapists, that's a good thing to know. You know, once you get to know somebody that is of a Native American descent, you can use that as part of your practice, you know, and you know, they'll joke back with you, you know, and they might tease you a little bit. But it's just a way of not taking life so seriously, you know, and we'll talk about some of those concepts as we go, you know, that I'd love to share with people, you know, although, you know, especially right now, we are in a time when there's so much changing in all of our lives. And, you know, we see the downsides of things, and we dwell on that, and that kind of makes us anxious. But when we look at it from an overall picture, and if we were to kind of fly in the sky and look down at ourselves and what's happening, it gives us the ability to just know that that's just part of life. And there are different moments in time and where we will have ups and we'll have downs, but that's just part of life. And when we have those down moments, those are things really an opportunity for us to go inside and learn some of the life lessons that will keep us going further in life as we become an elder, you know, to share with younger people.
When I was a little boy, I, for a short time, went to a Unitarian church, and it was in Santa Fe, New Mexico. So there were a lot of different kinds of ideas that were in it. And the pastor, I don't know if you would call him a pastor, his favorite character to evoke was Coyote. This idea of the trickster, the clown, the kind of, you're serious, you've got it all sorted out, you're doing your linear thing, and then Coyote comes and just shifts everything for you. And I love that energy as healing, humor, getting you out of control, getting you out of this linear thing that sometimes seems like it will take us to where we most want to be, but often it is actually part of what's keeping us stuck.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things I was thinking about was really trying to start at a common place where we can all come to an basic understanding. And one of the things that came to my mind when I was, of course, I didn't learn this as I was growing up, but eventually I learned it, was just this just world theory that came out of the Roman Catholic belief that, you know, it justified war. And, you know, all of our ancestors, whether we're Native American or non-Native American or European, we all come from that same history. You know, and the way that an analogy for looking at that is just a glass. And, you know, I might be sitting on one side of the glass. And if we're that glass is that particular type of shared trauma or shared history that we all have. And, you know, you have the non-natives on the opposite side of the glass. The experience is still the same, but it's how we were engaged in that experience. And it's really difficult for some people to see that. You know, and an example, continuing that same analogy, for Native American people, you know, we see the world as an intertwined, interdependent upon everything that we are as a human being. You know, we depend on the earth for our sustenance. We depend on the air and the water around us. And so when you have that connection, you're very reverent of it and you thank it. You know, there's an Andean word called Aini, which is called, is the understanding of that is it's sacred reciprocity. So today for me, tomorrow for you. And that is the way that we should look at things in life, is to honor everything in that way, which also includes these psychedelic medicines, I believe.
There's another word that discusses this kind of principle of a holistic perspective that comes from your tradition, which is, and correct me if I'm wrong in this pronunciation, but is the word Hojo?
Hojo. Hojo is a part of a bigger word that is the way that it's referred to as Sa'a, Naye, Bika Hojo, which is very difficult to translate into English, but the essence of it is in old age walking the trail of beauty. And so Hojong is that basic understanding. And so as a Diné woman, my goal in life is really to walk in that harmonious relationship with everything that exists around me. And so the goal in life is really to be in this present moment. You know, a lot of our elders say that when we start thinking and we start worrying about things that we don't have any control of, like tomorrow or next month or next year, we become anxious, you know, which then affects our physical body, our spiritual body, and who we are. But also the contrary is also the same, so that if we're focusing too much on our past experiences, then it can cause dis-ease in us. And so the whole idea with Hojo is to be able to walk in everything in harmony and balance. And so when we have those moments in our lives where things are very chaotic, the whole idea is to come back to the present moment, sit with the emotions, feel it, understand it. And what is a lesson that is there for me to learn from? So in order to achieve Hojong in our Diné culture, one has to be aware of the principles implicit in the universe that is around us. We don't try to control things like we're taught in the Western mindset. There are natural laws that allow things to happen. And so we just allow that to focus and to be and to exist. And so that's the essence of the word Hojong.
And from what I understand, you personally have walked a healing path that has informed the work that you do. And you are certified in integrated energy therapy, and you hold advanced degrees in health sciences, public and occupational health, and in technology. And you are a very compelling writer and speaker. That didn't just come from nowhere. You know, you've been on a journey yourself.
Yes, I have. You know, many of us who grew up on reservations are impacted by a lot of intergenerational trauma. And in my case, I've had those personal experiences. And the one that I love to share is my great-grandmother. Her name was Bishti Ba, was her name. And Bishti Ba, when you translate that in English, it means one who rides with the warriors. And Bishti Ba was, and her family, my great-grandparents on my mom's side, they were prisoners of war. They were placed in Fort Sumner when the cavalry came over. And this was at the time when they were trying to essentially assimilate Native American people. And for my Navajo Diné people, they were marched to Fort Sumner, which you may be familiar with, which is located just east of Albuquerque. And they were rounded up in the middle of winter, and they were put in this particular camp. And the whole idea was to assimilate them, to teach them how to be farmers, teach them how to be ranchers. And what they ended up there for about 8 years. And my great-grandmother, Bishti Ba, her and her dad and some of their relatives ended up walking back when she was about 2 years old. And so the story goes is that it took them about 2 years to walk back to Dinetah, which is the place where the Navajo people reside now. And so I really didn't think that that experience would, impact me, but I recognize that it has. And a more recent experience, when I had a trip to India, and I was at a ceremony with His Holiness, and it was very crowded. And of course, they have a different set of laws there. And one of the experiences that happened is security was trying to clear the area to allow His Holiness to come into the temple. And they were very aggressive with the bystanders, including where I was at. I understand when you're in the middle of a riot, what that feels like. And, you know, where you're trying to just hover and, you know, survive through that. And it wasn't until a couple of hours later afterwards that just that emotion just came through me. And being able to sit with that and be able to experience that, that was very healing. So that's one example. But I've also had experiences where I've had to go through my own inner healing from a very bad case of lupus. I had a very severe flare that got me hospitalized. And that was a whole journey in itself. It gave me an opportunity to really be a part of traditional ceremony as part of that healing process. But then also that was just the tip of the iceberg. It then took me further in to really uncover, just like an onion, where you peel back the different layers and really get at the crux of what's happening from an emotional standpoint. You know, as many Native Americans deal with in their communities is alcoholism. I had individuals in my own family that were alcoholics. And so really trying to look at that in a different way, to sit with that and see what that has done to me, really think about the assimilation process that has happened to my family. My mom was also placed in a boarding school. You hear a lot of horror stories about some of the Native American children that were taken from their families and put in boarding schools. Again, because that was the policy of the U.S. government, was to assimilate us. And as a result of that, our mom never taught us to speak our Diné language because she was afraid that we would get our mouths washed out with soap and, you know, all those things that go along with that, you know, and in a way it was just a protection mechanism. So really being able to really understand it in a different context. I also went through the experience where I was angry all the time with non-Native people. But it wasn't until I started doing this inner healing work and also working with sacred plant medicines to really do that uncovering, to really come to an essence of knowing who I was, both as a Diné woman and as a crystal fire child, is what we're called in our Diné way. It's the easiest way that I can interpret it in English.
And tell me a little bit about the corn pollen path, because I know that this is a part of your tradition, and I'm curious how this wove into some of the healing work that you did.
Mm-hmm. So the corn pollen path is a sacred path. So every morning before the sun rises, we take our little buckskin pouch that typically has corn pollen. And to the Diné people, corn pollen is collected from the tassels of the corn. So there's a very special time when you go through harvesting that happens at the very early morning dawn. And it's just at that time when you have the mist in the air and it opens up the pollen seeds that are at the top of the tassels. And then you're allowed to harvest that again. There's always that reciprocity that I spoke of earlier. But when I go out in the morning, I take my pollen out and then I pray to the east, you know, I always pray, you know, offer a little bit to the earth and offer it to Father Sky, you know, and I always spread a little bit in each of the four directions, and wherever that I travel, I lay my prayers down. And that corn pollen path is just a metaphor for the path that I walk. May my thoughts always be with integrity, you know, and may I always come from the place of the heart center in everything that I do, that I'm mindful of the words that I speak, because I don't think people recognize the value and the gift that our languages bring to our daily lives, and to be careful of, you know, our words. But our words first come from our mind and what we think, you know, and then to be able to take that moment of time and really, is that something I really need to say or not say? Or do I just leave it be, you know? And so, again, it's really being in that place where it's bringing you back to the center, bring into this place of hojong, this present moment. And that's really the essence of this, walking this corn pollen path. So that's our prayer. And it's the same prayer that our grandmothers, the same prayer that Bishti Bop had for us as her grandchildren. And now that I'm at the age that I am, I start to lay those prayers for my grandchildren. And so it just continues on from generation to generation. And that is the path that we walk in our lives.
In everything that you've shared so far in our conversation, there's a clear theme of the interconnectedness of all things, the mm-hmm. interconnectedness of you with your ancestors, with the land, this idea that everything affects everything else. And I think one of the great gifts of a psychedelic experience for individuals who feel incredibly separate is that it does expand our ability to see that connectedness that we hitherto hadn't seen. It certainly has been that experience in my life. Mm-hmm. I've felt very separate, had a very Western upbringing, and psychedelics have helped me honor beings in a completely different way. And so I think that that's an important thing for a psychedelic practitioner to consider if wanting to work with Native peoples, is that they actually are already, through their lineage, in an interconnected space. And that mm-hmm. and that needs to be, there needs to be an awareness of that before even entering into that work. Mm-hmm. And you've mentioned a couple of things as well about the sort of worldview of Native peoples, with speaking about Hojo, speaking about humor that we talked a little bit about. And we can talk about humor as much as you want, because I love humor. I think it's so helpful. I'm curious if there are other aspects of just an understanding of worldview that a psychedelic practitioner should have in mind if they want to work with Native people.
And I'm glad you brought up that point, because one of the things with most Native American people in their cultures, we are taught at a very young age that everything is sacred. everything from the smallest insect that could be outside that we, as in our Western mindset, might fear, think that with the, you know, those irritating red ants, you know, we got to kill them, you know, to be respectful of that, that they have a purpose in our lives, you know, and they can teach us a lot, you know. Nature can teach us so much about everything in our lives, you know. One of the examples that I was, that comes to mind is the spider. When you look at the spider web, when a spider weaves its web, and you're able to look at that, one of the things that I was taught early on is that, you know, the closer the webs are, the actual weaves in between them, that'll tell you how difficult the next winter will be. So it's an indication of some of those. And we've all forgotten how to read that in nature. And so, you know, my whole point was that everything is sacred. You know, the water that we breathe, you know, or the water that we drink, the air that we inhale, the fire that we use to cook our food, you know, the earth, all of those things are sacred. And then there's that interdependence in all of those things. And this moment that we are all experiencing with the virus, it's really causing us to go within ourselves and really know who we are for the purposes of, because everything's going to shift. It's no longer about me. It's about we. And most Native American communities, they already understand that, you know, that if my community is not well, then I will not be well, you know, and so there's that interchange or the interdependence, which brings up another point about personal worship and community. So when I go out in the morning and I'm offering prayers, it's not just about me and my family. It's about everything that exists around me, about the wellness of my community. As you well know, the Diné people have been one of the hardest hit Native American communities from this COVID. And so I travel every weekend to go visit my mom and spend time with her. And then I come back to the Phoenix area just to see what has happened, you know, in that setting on the reservation. You know, everybody's afraid of each other almost, you know, where as before our communities were very intertwined. And then it brings up a lot of intergenerational trauma types of things and behaviors and experiences all over again. And so that's the other point that I wanted to talk about. And as part of this healing process, you know, in our Western mindset, we have a tendency to separate things into silos. So we have mathematics, we have medicine, we have philosophy. In many traditional Native American cultures, they're so intertwined with each other that you can't separate them. And I recall an experience a couple of years ago when I went to my first psychedelic conference and they were talking about healing and there was like, you know, physicians, there were therapists there. And throughout the whole conference, I didn't hear at one time about any conversations around spirituality and the importance of having that connection. And so at the very end, I had an opportunity to sit on a panel and I raised that question to everybody in the room. What happened to spirit? You know, when we come as human beings, when we come to this earth in this realm, we come in a spirit form. We don't come in a physical form. And somehow we've gotten disconnected from that. And so if we're really talking about healing, we need to go back to that place and use it as part of the therapies that therapists are using, especially when they're working with Native American individuals or communities.
That's so important. And I think that it's very difficult in this moment in psychedelic medicine because there's such an emphasis on research and actually taking psychedelic healing and putting it into a Western medical model so that it can be validated, moved through FDA trials, and can be used because these medicines are prohibited. But I think by framing it entirely through Western medicine, there's a lot that's lost. Foremost, in my opinion, what's lost there is that these medicines are not about healing separate individuals with simple symptoms, like not simple, but like a straightforward symptom like depression. I'm a separate individual and I have depression. If I take this, the depression will go away. Actually, these medicines are about healing our societies, healing our interrelatedness, and that experience of depression could very well be a symptom of the very disconnection that is so often reinforced. And so I really applaud the voice that you're holding in this burgeoning field of psychedelic medicine, because if it just gets moved into the traditional Western medical establishment through pharmaceutical companies, through like these diagnostic markers, so much is lost. And I think that there's so much that you specifically and people with your perspective on the world have to bring to that conversation. So I'm glad that you're at these conferences. We need you. We need you at these conferences, and we need people like you at these conferences sharing and holding this center, you know, so that we don't get lost in the separateness of the ego that's so prevalent in our modern world.
Mm-hmm. You know, early on, I was talking about just some of the shared experience or shared history that we all come through colonialization. And if we sit with that for a moment, you know, sometimes when I bring up many of these topics at conferences or, you know, podcasts, people are offended by what I say because I'm very direct about it. And again, this is my experience. And what I ask them is that if you're feeling uncomfortable by anything that I'm saying, sit with that. Ask yourself, where is that coming from? Because chances are that it's coming from an experience in your ancestral lineage that you haven't gotten to a point to deal with that. And now is the time to deal with that. And so when you can start to uncover that feeling and where that's coming from, even as a therapist, you know, if you're a therapist and you're coming from a European descent and you already know a little bit of the history between the Europeans and the Native American people, you might want to sit with that a little bit and at least know yourself well enough so that you don't have that transference onto the person that you're supposed to be providing support for. That is so important. And I think what you said earlier about the Western medical models, they've never worked. You know, they may have worked at a period in time when it was created. And that's really what I meant by we really need to change the narrative of where we're all coming from, you know, and especially, for instance, as an example, the decriminalization movement for the use of psychedelics. And to me, when I think of decriminalize, you know, some people have the perception that, okay, I can use psychedelics and there's no repercussions for it, when really that's not what we're talking about. We're really just about, you know, where it falls in the order of what the law enforcement people will treat it as, you know, that it's really a minor infraction versus something that's a little bit more severe. But one of the things, you know, we all need to have this conversation, because when it comes to things like mesculine, you know, the medicine, the sacred plant medicines that come from peyote and wachuma and some of the other plants, it is there for all of our healings, but there's misunderstandings about who has rights over them. And so if we come from a colonial mindset, we always feel like we can dominate. We don't have to ask anybody's permission to use these medicines. And I would ask that you stop there for a moment. Where are you coming from? You know, are you coming from a mindset that's more about healing the whole? Or are you more about what's in it for me and coming from that ego perspective? You know, because if you're coming from that perspective, we're never going to get to a point where we can coexist with one another and help to heal each other. And so that's one of the things that I would share that. And it's so important for people to understand that concept.
Mm. And I think a way that this is expressed is to speak of the beautiful peyote plant. These little cacti, they take a long time to grow. Mm. They're not here for us to harvest so that we can have a good time. It's, you know, it's that extraction mentality of, you know, I want to take. You can't take from peyote because it doesn't grow that quickly. It's not going to grow back. You know, so having the sensitivity that you're describing around our relationship to the natural world and our place in it, that sensitivity allows us to pause and say, am I going to take this ancient little cactus here and just take it and consume it because I want to have this experience? Or am I going to connect deeply with the lineage holders and the wisdom tradition holders of this land who work with these medicines and ask permission and connect and see whether it would be appropriate for me to do that at all? And as we find these incredible healing properties of, say, like iboga, which is also an endangered plant, or, you know, with all the ayahuasca tourism happening in the Amazon, all the ayahuasca vines, like, we can't come in with this extractive mentality to just take from these plants and then extract chemicals to make pharmaceuticals. That is the wrong approach, because these plants are here as teachers. They're not here mm-hmm. as molecules to be extracted and consumed. That's not what the healing is. It's a misunderstanding of what the healing is.
Yeah. You know, recently I was reading a book called Donut Economics, and it's a really interesting book. And, you know, and it goes back to the point that I was bringing up earlier, in that some of these disciplines that we have learned, so the economics that we apply to our lives, right, in the 21st century, are things that were written back in the 1800s. And we're still trying to apply those models and those methods to what we the way we exist right now, which doesn't work anymore. And the reason why I really like this book was because it talks about cradle to cradle, you know, in the mindset of our old economic theories of macro and micro economics. It talks about cradle to grave, and then that's the end of the cycle. But that's not true. The way we should start thinking about is from cradle to cradle. So if we're out there harvesting plants for the use of healing, you know, such as peyote or some of the other mescaline-containing cacti, then we really need to be thinking from a mindset of how do we continue that life cycle so that it's not only here for our children, but also for our grandchildren. Mm-hmm. That is really the mindset that we should be coming from when we have these conversations about decriminalizing things, you know, or psychedelics, you know. And so I think that's something that's worth pursuing in the future.
Yeah, I love the invitation to try to be a good ancestor, you know, to live in such a way that you will be a good ancestor. And a friend of mine used that expression recently. I hadn't heard it before. I'm surprised I hadn't heard it before, because it's such a lovely way of describing a commitment to the future. And so I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, one of the other concept that came to mind was Native American people have this belief in the unseen. So more of the mystical that we find, say, for example, when we're having a psychedelic experience. In our Western mindset, we always think that we have to analyze things, which we do in research. And not that I have anything against research, but we always have to feel like we have to have answers for everything. And in the mystical traditions that you think of, they allow for that to happen. They allow for a creator to be a part of our lives. They allow for mystical deities to be a part of the teachings of who we are. When I think of my own culture and the Native American culture and the Diné culture, and even my Shui and my Zuni side, a lot of these prayers and these songs and these chants were passed down orally, you know, from generation to generation. And it teaches about the way to live our lives, not only as individuals, but collectively as a community. And so that's something that's really important, that we don't always have to have answers for everything, you know, to allow the mystical, because, you know, we hear this concept of people waking up, you know, to really what's happening around us. And, you know, we've been to, when I think about it, we've all been programmed to believe a certain way about certain things, you know, and when the blinders are pulled off from us and we're shocked in the moment of what we're having to digest and rethink about ourselves. Whereas if we just walk into it and we experience from that point on, there's so much for us to learn from that. You know, when I talk about a psychedelic experience, you know, and what it offers us, and it brings up a lot more questions in ourselves rather than just being with that and allowing that experience to be, we need to sit with that.
And that, of course, brings us back to the hojo, being present with the moment. So I'd like to move into just speaking a little bit about some specific considerations that a therapist might have when working mm-hmm. with Native American individuals and communities. You pointed out a couple in the article that you wrote for Chacruna that mm-hmm. I thought were, again, they were really important invitations, with working with Native people. Also really important invitations with working with anyone in this particular medicine practice, but most especially for Native peoples. And I wonder if you can speak a little bit to, for the therapists, healers listening to this podcast, what should they have top of mind when they're doing this work?
You know, a couple of things that come to mind that are really, really important is trust and respect. I shared with you just a small glimpse of the Native American experience with regards to genocide and all of those types of things. And one of the things that if you think about that, and if you have an individual that's coming to you for care or for healing, we need to keep that in mind. And so anytime that there's a non-Native person, for instance, for myself, and this is my own experience and why I wrote about this, was when somebody wanted to help me that was non-Native, I was taken by that because I wasn't sure that they were really there to help me. And so it goes back to that trust and that respect, because all of our ancestors in the past, anytime somebody said that we're here to help you, there was always either taking of the land, they were forced on reservations, they were put in boarding schools. And so there's always this kind of cynicism about, you know, hold off on, you know, really, are you really here to help me kind of thing? And so to be aware of that, and to, in order to build that rapport with that individual, you really have to have patience and, you know, respect for that. The other thing is Native American people are very private people. And, you know, I think about, I worked in a corporate setting, and I can remember conversations where my boss would say, what did you do this weekend? You know, who were you with and stuff like that. And for me, I kind of thought, boy, that's kind of rude for him to be asking. To me, that was private information. But for him, it was, you know, really just trying to get to know me and things that I liked and all of those kinds of things. And so with that, when I say that people are, Native American people are private, it's really important for you to hold that, especially if you're working with those types of communities, and in those communities that you're not sharing what happens in that clinical or treatment setting, because word gets out and it travels back around, and then your integrity is put in question. And so that's really important to know that. One of the things that we talked about earlier was just the models that you use for your therapy approach, is that make sure that it's really culturally based. You know, if you're working for a certain tribe, know what their traditions are, so that you can relate that back to them. And maybe there are some rituals or some ceremonies like sweat lodge that they can do either before they come into treatment to kind of help clear some of that energy, come in and do the treatment. And then as part of their integration piece, they can also use the sweat lodges as a way to continue that healing process. So that's another one. And then the last one I think that's really important is for you to really educate yourself about the culture. You know, keep in mind that the historical things that have happened are not Native American history. They're United States history. And we all share in that experience. And it's important that we know that and relate that to the communities that we're going to work with. You know, a similar point that I wanted to make about that is that there are 573 Native American tribes in the United States. And every single one of them are different from each other. Some are matriarchal, some are patriarchal. So the traditions and the cultures and the ceremonies that they exhibit or show are going to be different. And so it's important for you to know that. And I also encourage, you know, healthcare professionals, therapists to learn a few words, you know, hello, you know, goodbye. You know, that kind of shows your sincerity, that you really care who they are and really are trying to relate to them, goes a long way.
Yeah, that effort, that right relation effort, seems foundational in all of the points that you brought up. You know, the patience to build trust, the respect of privacy, the respect of these culturally specific treatment plans that are not monolithic. It's not that there is a Native American and you do a specific thing. No, these are different people from different lineages. And if you take the time to be in right relation, you can provide great healing. But if you're moving quickly and you're not aware of these things, then you're not going to be able to build that trust. And then that healing container is not going to be a safe container for that individual. It's really all about creating safety when we're talking about psychedelic healing, because these expanded states are, they're so vulnerable, they're so tender. And so yeah, the effort to be in right relation, to create the trust, I think is just so foundational to the healing based on everything that you've said. And I think for all people in psychedelic work, but I think most especially with Native American individuals.
You know, one of the other things that I think about is that when I first got into this work and I would hear words like psychedelics or ethnogens, you know, it kind of sounded like something very foreign. And in Native American traditions, these are sacred plant medicines, and they should be referred to as such. You know, all plants are medicine for us to heal, but these in particular have that sacredness about them because they open us up to the spiritual realms and to that spiritual healing. And that's also something that's really important for therapists to know and to treat it as such, you know. So if you're going to work with a client, you know, to really have a really sacred container, like a basket or a piece of pottery where you're having the medicine available there, just like it's a living being, you know, and clearing the energies in your space where you're going to be doing therapy, because they'll sense that energy as well. Something as simple as burning sage or cedar or sweetgrass, you know, to invite those inviting natural energies to be there and coexist as a person is going through therapy.
How do you feel about the therapist directly asking the individual that they're there to heal about these practices? Is that appropriate? I know we talked about privacy. Is it appropriate to meet a potential client, someone you want to work with, and say, I'm really interested in creating this experience for you in a way that's most healing? Can we talk about some of the traditional experiences that you've had that perhaps we can bring into this space together? And would you be willing to share with me ways that I can help you feel safe, for example, in clearing the energy of the space? Is that an appropriate way of approaching that individual?
I think you first have to build that rapport and that respect with that individual. You certainly aren't going to, on your very first visit, ask them that question. You know, if somebody asked me that question, I was like, boy, they don't even know who I am and they're asking this kind of question. But I would build that rapport with them. And then once you feel comfortable to ask that question and you're getting ready to, you know, take them through an experience, you know, ask them, you know, is there, and just ask an open-ended question, that there's something else that I can bring into this space as you're going through this healing, that might want to have some music where there's a Native American flutes playing. They might want to have some music that, there are some pieces out there that are really great to help open them and bring them to that sacred space where they feel that their ancestors are there to help walk them through this healing process, and that are very inviting. And I think there's a place for all of that. I know in my personal experience, that's what I have found to be help me to feel welcome and safe in that space. You know, we talk about setting, we talk about set and all of those types of things, and this is part of that.
So we're beginning to get close to the end of our hour together. And what I usually ask my guests, and it's interesting because we've kind of, the whole conversation has kind of been this question, but I'll go ahead and put this question out there, which is, I invite my guests, if they'd like to speak directly to the therapists and healers who are listening to the show right now, and really share anything that you'd like to share. This audience are people who are committed to serving others' healing, and they're listening to this so that they can better equip themselves to be good healers, good therapists, good support for people. And so with that in mind, I'm curious if there's anything that you'd like to share directly to those therapists and healers.
You know, one of the things that I think that I would like to share is that really know where you are in your own space, in your own healing process, because that's so fundamental when you're working with a Native American individual and where they're coming from. And although you might see that we're worlds apart from each other, I think the humanness and all of that can come across if you really are sincere about assisting them and helping them through this process. This is really something that's really different, and we're all learning from each other, and to be willing to make mistakes and not hold yourself too serious, you know, talking about the humor part of this, you know, because we're all learning to work with each other again, and that's not something that has always existed, and to allow for that as well. And it's okay to make mistakes. Reach out to people. People have questions. I always offer, you know, if you're not sure about something, you know, you can send me a message or an email. I have a website, which is www.kaloge.com. and people can send me messages about things. I try to put all of my articles and information on there for people to understand. And, you know, I'm trying to do more blogging around issues around cultural appropriation, about policy making in this space. And so I plan to do that, you know, in the next couple of months and start posting some of that information that I've been working on.
Belinda, you have anticipated my next question because I'm curious about how we can follow your work and what's next. And you just mentioned your website, and we'll have that in the show notes. Would you mind just spelling that, please?
www.kaalogii.com. And Kaloga is what it means is it's the butterfly. And when I started getting this work, I was trying to find something that would emulate the transformation of an individual's healing. And so that was how I came to the name of Kaloga, which is my business name. Mm.
And where else can people find you, follow you, support your work? And also, what's next for you? I know you've been doing a lot of speaking and conferences and podcasts. Where are you heading with your work right now?
Right now, I'm doing more of these types of interviews. One of the things that Spirit has called me to do is to work more with women. So I'm in the process of putting together a program, which is called Heal My Sisters, which is really working on some of that that inner healing, you know, the inner child healing, on dysfunctions of families, relationships, all the things that I've experienced in my healing journey. And my hope is that down the road that I'll be able to tap into some therapists, and that if some of these individuals that become a part of this program want to do, you know, work with these sacred plant medicines, that there's opportunity for them to do that as well, to not only heal themselves, because one of the things that I found is that when I do my healing, I heal my mom, I heal my grandmother, I heal my great grandmother, and I can make the connections, you know, with a fine line. And so that's kind of what my work is calling me to do. And of course, certainly be the bridge of understanding for people that are doing this work, because that's so important.
Well, I'm certain that we will have listeners of this show who are interested in that program and who are interested in connecting more with you and with what you have to share. And Belinda, I got to tell you, I've been kind of aware of you for a little bit here in the space of psychedelic medicine. And you gave a talk in Oakland, and I found out about the talk like right after it had happened. And I was like, that's exactly the type of information that I want to have with me if I'm going to be talking about psychedelic healing. And what we've discussed today, the conversation itself and the topics, it's all interconnected as well. You know, it's not that there's patience, but that the patience is somehow separate from the corn, pollen path. Like, it's all part of a kind of slow, right relation respect of the interconnectedness of everything. And awesome. I love how you embody that. And I'm grateful to get this chance to really connect with you personally, because I really appreciate the work you do.
And thank you for the opportunity. I really enjoyed this. And I like your questions. You know, anything I can do to help bridge that understanding, by all means. You know, there's no such thing as a dumb question. I've asked dumb questions, but, you know, it helps all each other to become more integrated with one another and really see each other as brothers and sisters.
Well, and I'm so grateful for the invitation to make mistakes, you know, because I think that people of my lineage, you know, I'm Irish Scot by way of Australia and America. So I have a lot of like colonization in my lineage, and there's such a fear of making mistakes, and it can be so dangerous to do nothing because you're afraid of making a mistake, because that in itself is actually a mistake, you know? So to be able to reach out and connect and learn. And then even like at the very beginning of this conversation, when I was kind of fumbling with my computer to find out who lived where I'm sitting right now, I felt a little awkward. But of course, yeah. I'm going to keep that in the interview, because that's such an important part of the interview, right? Like that awkwardness and the fact that that's okay to make that mistake. Absolutely. And then learn.
Absolutely. Because you're going to find that there are other people that are in that same boat as you are. So you're not the only person that's rowing your canoe.
Mm-hmm. I like that. Well, Belinda, it's been such a pleasure. Thanks again for coming on the show. And I just look forward to following your work. And I hope we can do another interview sometime. Maybe when you get that program up and we can do a little promotion. Tell me again the name. It's Healing My Sisters.
It's called Heal My Sisters. Mm.
Yeah. Well,
it was a message that Creator had given to me in dream time. And it was actually the first time I ever heard a voice speaking to me and telling me what I needed to do and what my work was going to be. And so it's the creation of this particular program.
Beautiful. Well, I'm really excited to hear more about it. And thanks so much again. Take care, Belinda.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us on the Psychedelic Therapy Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please join the Psychedelic Therapy Facebook group to talk about it. You can also share it with your friends or leave a review on iTunes so more people can discover the show. The Psychedelic Therapy Podcast is presented by Maya, a platform designed to help psychedelic therapists manage and measure client journeys. You can head to mayahealth.com to learn more. The show is for informational purposes only and is not intended to provide mental health or medical advice. Thanks for listening.